Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing Podcast.
And I won't go off on this tangent, but the fly fishing industry has it absolutely backwards. The fly fishing industry wants you to believe that your most important piece of gear is, of course, what? Your rod. Number two, they want you to believe the reel. When the reality of the matter is that your most important piece of gear is your fly. But one could argue that if you don't have the right leader, and that leader, first of all, can't deliver the fly to the target properly, well, then what good is the world's best fly?
That was Brian Fleshig making an argument for the most important part of your fishing gear, getting started in fly fishing with one of the best in the business today on The Swing.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how you doing today? Thanks for stopping by the show. Did you know that it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month? This month, Fairflies has a special giveaway going on to raise awareness for breast cancer. You can win some Fairfly-themed brushes, some tools, Wasatch tools, and a local guided fishing trip right now if you head over to wetflyswing.com/pink. That's P-I-N-K. And you're going to support breast cancer awareness and have a chance to win some gear. And you get double bonuses when you click over there if you head over to castingforrecovery.org as well after you check out that giveaway page. Today's episode is sponsored by Range Meal Bars. Each Range bar has 700 calories and fits easily into the pocket of your backpack, your vest, your sling, anywhere you need it. You always got it on the go. Range bars only use the highest quality gluten-free ingredients, and they are the most convenient and compact way to get out the door and on the river. You can support this podcast and get some tasty bars by heading over to wetflyswing.com/range. That's R-A-N-G-E. Range Meal Bars, a legitimate meal in your pocket. We're also sponsored by Country Financial. Dalton is a local insurance agent at Country Financial who thrives on helping families and community members through the power of education and proper insurance coverage through life's worst disasters. The unexpected will happen, so it's always best to make sure your assets are protected. Dalton keeps it real. He's local. It's good to connect with him. You can check him out right now if you head over to wetflyswing.com/country. That's C-O-U-N-T-R-Y. Right now. Check it out. Brian Fleshig is going to take us back to square one for those that are new to fly fishing. This is a good episode. I love to do these every once in a while. Brian's over there at Mad River Outfitters, and he's been just basically doing an amazing job for many years now, and he's really good at breaking things down. He's got a cool YouTube video series that we're going to talk about today where he breaks down the step-by-step on beginning fly fishing. We also find out how he has connected and is friends with some of the biggest names out there, including Kelly Gallup comes up against. That was a fun one today. And we talk about some of the most common questions that he gets on a daily and weekly basis. So, you know, I love a good Kelly Gallup. It's almost like the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Is this going to be this new 7 degrees of Kelly Gallup? That might be the new thing we have going. I think I'm going to have to check on that one. So this one's super worthy, super worthy. Let's do this. So without further ado, here we go. Brian Fleshig from MadRiverOutfitters.com.
How's it going, Brian?
It's going well, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for setting a little time aside this morning to dig into some on, I think what we're going to talk about, we occasionally do these intro episodes. You guys have this really great YouTube channel. You've got a ton of followers there. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But maybe like a beginner episode, right? Because there's people, a lot of people out there that are, you know, mystified, right, by fly fishing, but you have a way of keeping it simple. So we're going to touch on that, maybe talk about the Mad River Outfitters and everything else. But before we go there, take us back to real quickly to fly fishing, how you got into all this.
Oh, boy. You know, my first recollection when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And it's really kind of funny because I'm literally sitting right next to this box that I'm going to talk about right now. I'm sitting at my fly tying desk as we speak. But when I was about 5 or 6 years old, my dad had built this wooden box. And it was a cabinet. It had drawers in it and everything. And it was where he kept his fly tying stuff. And I can remember opening up those drawers and finding all these exotic feathers. And I remember there was a moose tail, which I think I still have. I remember just opening up that box and going through all the threads and hooks and materials. And just, I can still remember the smells. And it just, I was just totally enthralled by it. And I remember asking my dad to show me kind of what this was for and how to do it. And I think I wound up tying a fly. I called it the Fleshig Special. In fact, I still have it. And I was about 6 or 7. And then I do remember I was 7 and I went on a trip alongside my Uncle Bill. And he took me to a place called Bennett Springs in down in southern Missouri. And I caught my first trout on a fly rod. And, you know, it's pretty much all I've done. Well, that and played music. And then I figured out a long time ago I couldn't make a living playing music. So I picked the next most lucrative business, of course, would be fly fishing other than being trying to be a mandolin player.
Right. Nice. And maybe we might hold on to some of the music for towards the end, because I always love digging into a little music. But you started your whole life, right? You got your dad, your uncle, everything. How does it come into your transitioning into where you know this is going to be a career or, you know, a business for you?
Well, I think when I was in my teens, of course, being in, junior high and high school, I got into girls and cars and playing music and such. So I probably got away from it for a few years, but my whole life growing up was just centered around fishing. I mean, my uncle was a fanatic, my dad, my grandfathers. So I fished my whole life. And then I guess when I was about 15 or 16, I forget. My dad, we moved from St. Louis, Missouri to Cincinnati, Ohio. And my dad somehow got teamed up with a group called the Buckeye United Fly Fishers. And he started getting back into fly tying and to rod building. And then we started going to these fly tying classes. And I just got into it real heavy again and just started studying and reading books. And, I was really just totally immersed in really only two things, and that was playing music and fishing. And I guess I was going to college. I actually went to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music and studied jazz guitar, which was odd because I was more into playing bluegrass, mandolin, and into the Rolling Stones and the Grateful Nice. Dead more than anything else. So I quit college and I was working at a music store. I was kind of assistant manager and was teaching guitar lessons. But at that time, a fly shop had opened up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it was a real small shop. And I started hanging out in that shop and they found out that I fished a lot on the Mad River. And, just one day they asked me if I would be interested in guiding for them. And next thing I know, about a week later, I was guiding. So here I was I think I was 18 at the time. And here I was guiding a guy that was 60 years old. And about 6 months later, long story short, the shop changed hands, ownership, and then the new manager asked me, he said, "Hey, I need a manager of this shop." And he had become the owner, and he said, "Hey, I need a manager. Would you be interested?" And I said, "Sure." And next thing you know, I was 19 years old and the manager of a fly shop. And
wow.
Yeah. And so I did that from 1990. I think that was summer of 1990. And boy, it just took off from there. It's all I've ever really wanted to do for a living. It's all I've really ever done for a living other than part-time jobs when I was a kid. And I hosted my first trip. It was kind of funny. The first trip I ever hosted was in the fall of 1990. And it was a salmon trip up on the Pierre Marquette River.
Oh, yeah.
And my guides were Charlie Weaver, whom I went on to become great friends with. And we recorded a CD together. Also a musician, obviously. And we recorded a CD called River Songs. Another one of my guides was Walt Grau, who is just a legend up in Michigan. Still in the business, still guides up in Alaska. And he invented a lot of techniques that we still use today and introduced two-handed rods to Michigan. Just an absolute legend. And the other guide on that trip was Kelly Gallup.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so, Kelly and I formed an instant friendship, and man, for years, I would host trips to Michigan and Charlie and I would play music and Kelly and, oh goodness, just a Jack Ford and just a laundry list of kind of Midwestern legends would always be there and gathered. And of course we'd stay at the bar until too late and then, have a tough time guiding the next day, but
right.
Anyways, so then it was, that shop kind of had some issues over time. And I can remember going to my dad and saying, "Hey dad, this is what I want to do for a living. I think we could do this for ourselves." And, I said, "I'm sure I can do this." And, we actually contacted Orvis at the time. I did a lot of work with them back then. And they said, "Hey, Columbus, Ohio is right up the road. It's an open market. It needs a fly shop." And I guess real long story short, I quit my job October 1st. I moved to Columbus November 1st, and we opened Mad River Outfitters December 1st in 1994.
Oh, 94. Yeah, yep. Right on. So that is an amazing story. And of course, yeah, Kelly Gallup, we've had on a couple times. And you mentioned some other people that I would definitely love to connect with as well, that their names have come up over the years. But I want to go back to that guide trip, that first guide trip when you were, 18 years old. And you got it. What was that? Do you remember that trip at all?
Oh, absolutely. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a gentleman by the name of Clyde Rolfe. And Clyde became a great friend and a great customer of Mad River Outfitters over the years. And did all kinds of traveling with us. He used to go to the Bahamas with me. We've did Montana, British Columbia, Labrador. Just a great guy. In fact, Clyde was very well known. He was the inventor of Nicorette gum.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, he invented that stuff. So,
holy cow.
But yes, I remember. I can remember where I was. We had an epic Hendrickson hatch come off, and we caught a mess of fish on Hendrickson dries and a merger. And I still remember where we were standing. We were standing at a little hole on the river that we call Mike's Hole. It's on the property of a friend of ours named Mike, obviously. And man, we just tore them up. So I think that really kind of set the stage for my confidence level and being a guide and being able to, like I said, Clyde was probably in his late 50s at the time. And
yeah.
Here I was 18 years old and had never really thought of being a guide. And then all of a sudden I was thrust into it and I just fell in love with it. I really did.
That's what it sounds like. That's the cool thing is that I think guiding can be tough, right? And especially you go in there as a new guide, maybe you don't know the water as well. And, what you imagine if you would have had a trip where you guys got skunked, could that have changed the complexion on your journey or do you think you would have stuck with it?
You know, I'm certainly not a psychologist, but I would imagine that that trip probably played a pretty big role in teaching me that, hey, this is something you can do. And it really taught me that I had something to share, because he had no idea. You know, the Mad River, which I'm sure we'll talk about, It was an hour and a half from his house. He had never fished it. We've got a really nice population of brown trout and some decent brown trout. And here was, he had been driving to Michigan to try to catch the Hendrickson hatch for 20 years. And I think we caught more and bigger trout in Ohio than he had ever caught on the Ausable up in Michigan. And it just, you know, it just made me feel really good and made me feel like, hey, there's something I can share. I mean, I still had a lot to learn, but there's a lot that I can share and a lot that I can show people and introduce people to. And I think it probably really did set the stage. If we would have gotten skunked, I don't know, maybe I would have hung it up and tried to make a living playing the mandolin.
That's right. Back to the mandolin. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Do you still do you play the mandolin still?
I don't, man. It's been about 12 years since I really played at all professionally, and I figured out it was trying to run a business and trying to be a part-time musician on the side just wasn't worth my time, and I had to give up one of them. So obviously that's what got the axe.
Gotcha. And so now you're on, you look at the 18-year-old, you start out as 18, and now we're kind of on the other end, right, looking back. Do you still see a lot of the 18-year-olds, younger folks coming through the shop there?
You know, we've done a couple YouTube videos on this recently. In fact, I think one came out yesterday. Brad Beefus from Scientific Anglers and Orvis and I were talking about the fact that the youth in this sport is, not only is it alive and well, but it's thriving. The number of, you know, I think there was a time where we were a little concerned about the future of fly fishing. And, you know, most of the clientele was older, middle to upper class type of thing. And now we're just seeing kids. I mean, these kids are tying flies, they're fishing hard, and tons of kids, even 14, 15 or younger. But the 20-somethings and 30-somethings that are in the shop, that are on our YouTube channel and that are shopping online with us is just, it's astronomical. In fact, Kelly and I did a video, came out a year and a half ago or so, and we talked about the same and talked about there's a revolution going on, especially with fly tying.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do with, of course, social media and YouTube and such, but it's really, really exciting to see. And I think the future of our sport is, I think it's very, very safe, and I think it's in good hands.
Love that. Yeah. And I've heard you on, and I'll put some links out to the videos that you mentioned there and what we talk about today in the show notes, but I've heard your take on it on a few, maybe as another podcast or some other stuff where you talked about, you know, just the overall fly fishing, how, you know, we're not saving, we're not saving babies and stuff. I mean, this isn't like the end of the world, right? We're literally casting a fly. I mean, describe that a little bit, your take on fly fishing, because I think maybe some people, get a little too serious about it. What is your overall take on fly fishing, and what keeps, like the old white guy, right? That old thing back in the day when it seemed like that was the demographic. Talk about that, the difference there to where we were and maybe where we're going now. You've seen that change, right?
Well, I have, most definitely. And if I just even look at Mad River Outfitters and how we run the business, it used to be back in the day where, even the clothing that we sold. I mean, for example, the Howler Brothers brand that we do so well with. We would have never, 25 years ago, we would have never considered selling shirts that have a mermaid embroidered on them because the demographic that, 55 to 75 year old man is not going to buy a shirt like that. But now the styles have changed. Of course, the flies have changed. What we fish for has changed. And the demographic is absolutely completely different. And that old, you know, when I first started the shop, and I mentioned that I used to work very closely with Orvis, and we still do, but there was a day when we were what was called a full line Orvis dealer. And this is back in the days when Orvis was, and forgive me, Brad, and folks at Orvis, but they were like the Gestapo. And you had to carry Orvis this, Orvis this, Orvis this, and you could not carry Sims or Sage or any other competitive brands. And we also had dog beds and women's clothing and stuff like this. So it was kind of a, and this is before Orvis started opening their own retail stores. So they relied on us and their full line dealers. And that whole thing, I mean, we no longer, thankfully, we don't sell dog beds. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love dog beds. Yeah. We sell tons of women's clothing. But it's not the same kind of stuff. I mean, we're not selling plaid skirts. I mean, we're selling technical fishing gear. And that's a whole other demographic that has changed dramatically, even in the past 5 or 6 years, is the number of women getting into the sport is absolutely amazing. But it used to be, I made this comment, and I think I offended a couple of people that, you know, we used to have these kids that come in and you would expect to see them out riding a skateboard. And no, they're coming into the shop and tying flies instead of spending their time skateboarding. And I'm not nothing against skateboarding. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just trying to paint a picture here.
Yeah.
But they've got their hair's longer. They've got tattoos and things like that. And this is stuff that you would just never see 25 years ago in a fly fishing store. And I love it. You know, back in the day when I would hire people, I used to tell them that at work, we wear button down shirts. We tuck in our shirts. And these days I've got kids working for me that, good Lord, they keep the tattoo artists in business and they wear t-shirts to work, but it's cool and it's fine. And it's, I like that. I mean, I still wear my button down shirts and tuck in my shirt, but you have this diversity.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that the fly fishing industry has done a really great job of. If you've got tattoos and you wear a t-shirt or your black, white, yellow, you're male, female, or identify as other, or your whatever religion, everybody is welcome. In our shop, and everybody is welcome in the sport of fly fishing. So it's interesting to me how that dynamic has changed. Because I used to tell people that we don't wear t-shirts to work. Well, of course, you're not going to be wearing a Coors beer t-shirt,
right.
But as long as it's Mad River Outfitters or fly fishing related or something, it doesn't bother me at all. And I don't think it bothers the people that shop there. In fact, I think, having that diversity. I mean, we have Linda, we have Katie, we have Judy, we have Christina, we have girls, we have 22-year-old kids. We've got, thankfully, I'm not the oldest person that works at Mad River Outfitters. We've got older people than me. And there's just this, you know, some short hair, some no hair, some long hair. This diversity that has entered the sport of fly fishing is just, it's really, really inspiring, and it's fun to see. Now, the other note that you talked about is, and this is something I feel very strongly about, and I say this all the time, and I'm sure you see it with your podcasts. Of course, we see it on social media. We see it on our YouTube channel that, yes, there is a segment of our sport that takes this way too seriously. Yeah. And no, we are not curing cancer. We're not saving babies. We're not. I have yet to come up with any sort of vaccine. there's. I've really done nothing to contribute to the planet. have to always remember that what we're doing is an absolutely, now it's meaningful to me. I love going out a lot of times by myself and catching. I can go out in the evening locally and catch one or two bluegill, or run over to the mat and catch one fish on a sulfur dry fly and turn around and come home. And I spent 2 hours in the car and 20 minutes fishing, and it's worth it to me. And a lot of people don't get that, but I have to realize that I'm not doing anybody any good except for myself. And to a certain extent, it's somewhat of a selfish kind of proposition. I mean, I could have done a lot better in life and done a lot more for the world had I become a doctor or, you know, something a little bit more meaningful, but it is what it is. We love fishing. You know, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. It's what we love. It's what we breathe. It's what we do. And other than that, I really can't explain it, but it's not all that important in the big scope of the world.
No. And there are a couple of things, probably some of those people that would say, you know, maybe it is important is might talk about, I mean, just, you know, inspiring people and getting people outdoors, right, and that sort of thing, and maybe changing their lives, and maybe they're doctors, and that helps them do great things. But also the conservation piece, right? I mean, you hear a lot of that, right? Conservation, because obviously we want to conserve our fish species, right? That's a big thing. But conservation is a big piece. Patagonia is a big company you hear a lot about. You know, Yvonne just made a big announcement recently, right? What's your take there? Do you feel like that conservation piece is something that's kind of intertwined into most fly fishing folks?
I guess that's you made two good arguments there. And I guess that's first and foremost, is that we are involved in an industry that is highly involved in conservation efforts. And it's very similar with the hunting side of thing. I mean, you know, people try to knock hunting, and I know there's a lot of we still see a lot of anti-fishing people that chase us around on social media, on YouTube, and that's fine. They're entitled to their beliefs. I wish they wouldn't share them on our social media and such, but that's fine. But the thing that they have to remember is, just like hunters, there's probably no greater group that does more for the deer populations or the elk populations than hunters. And it's the same thing for fly anglers. I mean, the industries are intertwined. And thankfully, for companies like Patagonia and Orvis and really all of them, I mean, you can't name a company that isn't in our industry that isn't conservation minded. And, you know, we are always supporting and donating donating our time and energy to helping out with cleanups. You know, myself or at least one of our staff try to go to all the meetings that are held here in the state of Ohio about the fisheries and things like that. So the industries are intertwined. So I think you're right about that. And kind of goes against what I was saying before, that I guess in a sense that we are contributing to conservation efforts, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, I do hear it all the time, is that people say, well, actually, Brian, what you and Mad River Outfitters is doing is important, because even, for example, somebody will say to us that, hey, I come here once a week and I spend an hour hanging out and talking to you guys and just looking around the shop, and this is my escape.
Yeah.
This is my safe place. This is my fun place. And then, you know, I have people that say they every Saturday morning, it's a ritual. They wake up and make coffee and watch our latest video. Nice. And they couldn't imagine life without that. And hopefully, well, we bring some joy and maybe a smile and some laughter and a little bit of education to their lives. And so, yeah, I guess there's something to be said for that. And of course, it's not only me. I mean, people listen to your podcast. They watch Kelly's videos. They watch and they enjoy it. And it gives them an escape from the real life. And even if they can't be out fishing, they can be thinking about fishing. So, yeah, we're still not saving babies.
No, that's right. We're still not saving babies, that's for sure. Yeah.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fishhound Expeditions, who you know is putting together remote Alaskan wilderness trips for that bucket list trip of a lifetime. Alaska is one of those places that it's hard to explain. At times it's a little colder. At times there's maybe not as much sun. Sometimes there's a lot of sun. But this trip is amazing. We just got back, went up there. We had 4 days on the river. We flew in with a helicopter into a remote gravel bar. That trip, just the flight in with the helicopter, was amazing. We swung in. You can check out that video on our Instagram of the helicopter. Check out the story. Got on the river. We had a bunch of river time. The first night out there, the northern lights just popped out. We were all sitting there looking up and we're like, wow, what is that? I haven't seen those in a long time. That was amazing. The fishing was exceptional. The river was a bit high for us, and even though it was high, we still landed some amazing rainbows. And there's something about these rainbows that they just don't make them quite like that down in the lower 48. I mean, it's kind of like, it reminded me a lot of a steelhead, to be honest with you. You get these fish on, and you know, a lot of them were in the definitely over 20 inches, you know, mid 20 range, a lot of these fish, and they were fat. We were there in September, so they were eating a lot of food, and they were just hammering us. So I can't say enough about Adam and the crew, Cam, Will. We had a good time. Nick and I we were treated to great food, great service. They had it all out there, and it was just an awesome trip. So if you want to check out Fishhound Expeditions, find out more information, you should check in with Adam right now. You can go to wetflyswing.com/fishhound. That's FISHAOUND. And go over there and check in with Adam. Send him an email. Give him a call. He'd love to fill you in on the details of the different trips he has going. They do a lot of different things out there, including some steelhead trips. So that's definitely one that's out there still, the Kodiak stuff. So if you're interested in one of those trips of a lifetime up to Alaska, Adam's got you covered. Okay, let's get back to the show.
I love that you touched on the video. I mean, and Kelly, of course, you know, has a great YouTube channel. I want to talk about that just a little bit before we dig into our, you know, kind of the more of the topic on, I want to get into the getting started for somebody who's new, but talk about your channel, because I mean, it seems like it's really blown up, you know, and Kelly's got a great channel as well, but I think you're well ahead of Kelly. Maybe talk about that. All right, first of all, do you compete with Gallup and some of the other folks out there? And then also, how did you get to that point where, what's the success of your YouTube channel? Why is it so successful, do you think?
Well, first and foremost, no, we don't. I don't compete. You know, Kelly and I have been very close friends, for 30, almost 33 years now. Wow. We help each other. I mean, there's always that. If you know Kelly, I mean, Kelly's a very competitive guy. He used to be a bodybuilder and, yep. You know, Kelly's competitive by nature, but, I don't think he or I have ever felt an ounce of that. In fact, we help each other. You know, Kelly is constantly sending clients to us and vice versa. And, you know, in fact, we've shared some website, kind of technology recently. And we've always said that what helps Kelly helps us, and mm-hmm. what helps the industry helps us. And to be honest with you, man, I kind of live in our own little Mad Ralph world, and I don't really look outside that box very often.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, you and I, it took a couple of hours for me to even be able to log into a simple thing for me to be able to do a podcast. I don't watch YouTube videos. I work 6.5 days a week, 18 hours a day, and I don't have time for that. So we just do what we do, and I've always felt that as long as we do it with integrity and we do it with honesty and we do it well and stay true to who we are and what we do and to the sport of fly fishing, I've always felt that the success will be there, and it certainly has been. I mean, we're actually, you know, Mad River Outfitters and all of its entities We have OhioFlyFishingGuides.com. We have MidwestFlyFishingSchools.com. We have Mad River Travel Division. And then the YouTube channel and all of those things, it is successful beyond my wildest dreams, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't be more thankful and I couldn't be more proud. We have an amazing staff, just an amazing staff of people that love to come to work. In fact, they're all probably at work right now wondering where I am. I think I forgot to tell them we were doing this. But they're just, I'm so, so proud of them. And they're just all good people. They're excellent at customer service. They care about their customers and they're excellent at what they do. They can all fish. They all are all diehard, dedicated anglers. And I couldn't be more proud. That's now, cool. the YouTube channel, I'm not sure. I think as far as the success of the YouTube channel, I think we're going to hit 200,000 mm-hmm. subscribers probably in the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure. I don't know of any others that have that many, but mm-hmm. I think it has to do with a bunch of different things. I think we entered into the market at just the right time. We've really been doing this almost as a full-time job now for about 5 years, and we've been on YouTube for about 8 years. So I mm-hmm. think we were probably one of the first to enter that market. I think the fact that we don't have sponsors, it's not brought to you by Sims, and then I have to be wearing a Sims shirt and I have to yep. talk about a Sims product. I can be completely unbiased and of course, like I said, integrity and honesty. We always try to be honest. I think there's a no BS attitude. I think a lot of times I will, on the channel, for example, I will tell people, hey, you don't need this. You don't need to spend $1,000. You can fish just fine with a $99 fly rod. And I think that blows people away sometimes.
Yeah.
And then I also have to mention Dev Fogel, who is my right-hand man. He has no interest in fishing whatsoever, but he is the single best video editor I've ever worked with. And he has an amazing, amazing sense of comedic timing.
Mm.
And just an amazing sense of editing. But I think we make things a little lighthearted and we poke fun at ourselves. We have a lot of laughs. We do a lot of really stupid things, which I know turns some people off some of the time. But then again, 200,000 subscribers, we're doing okay.
That's right.
So I think it's a variety of different things just cutting through some of that BS, not having to promote a particular brand. As much as – and, of course, we do love Orvis. I have a great relationship with Orvis, and Tom Rosenbauer is fantastic at yep. what he does. And I grew up reading some of his books and – but the reality is when it comes to their YouTube channel, I mean, they're not going to show you the new pair of Sims waders or a new Sage rod.
No.
They're just not. So I think that plays a big role in it also, is that I'm not handcuffed. There's nobody telling me what to do. There's nobody telling me what to promote. It's we're always trying to inform and educate and entertain.
Yeah.
And that might be the real answer is that might be Dev Fogel and his editing is he makes things entertaining. And I think that so many of your fly fishing videos out there are just not entertaining. They're just, they're boring.
Yeah.
And I think that aspect, pays dividends, for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that you said educate, entertain. I've mentioned this before, but I call it the three E's. It's same with podcasting as it is with YouTube, I'm sure. But you know, you get, and I add the emotion, right? You could have that in a podcast too, where if you add,
absolutely.
You
know,
if you have all three of those things, you kind of knock it out of the park. If you have two of them, you're doing good. If you only have one of those, you know, you could do okay, but you know what I mean? So the more ease you have, it sounds like, you know, yours, obviously you're educating and then you add that entertainment piece. That's big. I'm curious on, you know, we've occasionally do these podcast episodes with people with new fly shops, right? Just getting into it. Mm-hmm. What would be your quick advice to somebody, maybe they're listening now, they have a new fly shop, or maybe they're thinking about it, to help them be successful? What would you tell somebody new to the game?
Make tons of mistakes.
Yeah.
Try things. Dave, I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, I made so many mistakes over the course of my career, and so many bad decisions.
Yeah.
And you know what? Thankfully, I was able to survive, and I learned from those mistakes and bad decisions, and eventually you get around to making good decisions.
Yep. What was your, I'm just curious, you might not, I mean, is there a mistake, a bad mistake that comes to your mind from your whole, you know, all these years of doing this?
It's people. It's aligning yourself with the wrong people.
Mm.
You know, I just got finished reading a book, and it was called Who, Not How. And I recommend this book to anybody, period, but especially if you're in a leadership position. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was always so focused on the how. How do I get this done? How do I do this? How do I do this? And then what I was neglecting was, in order to get the how done, you have to have the right who. And I picked the wrong who's in so many situations, from maybe even reps that I decided to jump in bed with or go in business, employees, especially when it comes to website people and all these search engine optimization people. You need to find people that you trust. And you need to put your trust in them and let them do their job. You need to realize that you're going to need a lot of help, and that help is going to be expensive. And, you know, I would just say work. One thing that I see a lot, and I'm starting to hear this more and more, and especially after the pandemic, a lot of reps are telling me that they've got these shops that could do well, but the shop only wants to work 4 days a week, and then, you know, have weekends off and have Wednesday off. And that's just not how it works. I mean, I work 6.5 days a week, almost 18 hours a day sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so does my staff.
Right.
You've got to work hard. You've got to treat people right. And the other thing that has always bothered me about our industry, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, is that elitism that kind of comes with fly fishing. And so many people tell me that they go into a fly shop and they don't feel welcome, they don't feel comfortable, and they feel intimidated. And that's the downfall, I think, of most fly shops.
Right.
And you've got to welcome everybody with open arms, no matter what their skill level, no matter what their skin color, no matter what their gender, religion. Everybody has to be welcome, and they have to be treated you know, with the same respect as a guy that's been doing it for 60 years and knows everything.
Yep.
And that's probably my biggest piece of advice right there.
That's great. No, I love that. It's another great take on that. So, well, I want to just dig in quickly as we're talking about, obviously, been talking about education, teaching, and dig in. You know, we could talk about your YouTube channel, some of the videos and things like that you've had out there. But, you know, let's take somebody here that probably somebody listening now is fly fishing, but maybe it's a friend of theirs, somebody that maybe, you know, wants to get into it, but's new to it. What do you, let's take us through a couple of those things, maybe a list of, like, when you get somebody new into the shop or you're talking to somebody, what do you tell them if they're kind of new to it, and maybe they've even tried it a time or two and they're struggling? What's your advice?
Well, you can take a multi-pronged approach, and this is kind of what we do in the shop. And basically, I'm going to be quoting right from our series on YouTube called Getting Started in Fly Fishing.
Perfect.
And we have always catered to beginners at the shop. The beginner is the foundation. It's the rock, really, of our industry. And it's part of the reason why we're seeing such amazing growth in our industry is people getting into the sport. So they're, once again, they are just as important or even more important than the veterans. But for someone getting into the sport of fly fishing, and you can find this in episode one of the 14 episode series, Getting Started in Fly Fishing. But there's six basic things that you need to understand when it comes to fly fishing. And it's literally a list, like you asked. And number one is you need to understand a fly rod. Number two, you need to understand a fly reel and what it does and kind of the ins and outs and the options that you have when you're looking to make a purchase. Number three, you need to understand the fly line system. And that fly line system consists of typically backing a fly line and a leader. And hopefully we can touch on leaders a little bit because your leader is the most overlooked and undertaught part of the system in our industry. And it's your first or second most important piece of gear. But number four on that list is you need to have a few basic accessories. And in our videos, we break those down. I mean, obviously, like some nippers, some hemostats, maybe some split shot fly floating, and maybe strike indicators if you're a nymph angler. So you need to have a handful of basic accessories. And then number five on that list is you need to have some polarized sunglasses. First and foremost, your eyes don't grow back if damaged. And therefore, you need to protect your eyes against a hook flying past your face at 90 miles an hour. Yeah. And then number two, polarization obviously cuts through the glare in the water, helps you see fish, helps you see structure, helps you see maybe where you're wading. For a variety of different reasons, polarized sunglasses, in my estimation, are a critical piece of gear. And then number six on that list, to get started in fly fishing, you need a body of water. And preferably, there would be some fish in that body of water. And those are the six basic things that you need. So what we do in that video series, and then also I teach this class, we do a free beginner's program at Mad River Outfitters. Pre-pandemic, we used to do it. I used to do about 8 or 10 of them a year. We're slowly dipping our toes back into the world of in-person classes here. In fact, hopefully we've got an announcement coming out this week. But anyways, I've always taught this free beginners program. It was open to everybody to register. It didn't cost them a thing. And it was a 2-hour program. And I break down each of those six basic things. And it's really not all that complicated. People are always so intimidated by fly fishing. And you don't have to know the Latin names of all these bugs and insects that are found, especially for us. I mean, most of, 90% of what we do around here and for the local people getting started around here, we're catching smallmouth. I mean, you need a streamer, you need a crayfish, and you need a popper.
Yep.
And you need a 12,000th or 0x leader for everything that you do. And you don't even need the fly floating. You probably don't even need the split shot. So it's actually much, much easier than people think. And then once you get into the sport, I've talked about this, quite a bit on the channel, and it does seem to resonate with a lot of folks, is people get so hung up on techniques and they get so hung up on this technique and that technique. And I got to learn this cast and I got to learn this cast and I got to learn this. And it's really as simple as this. You take a fly that looks like food. Okay. And if you buy it from a fly shop, it's probably going to look like some sort of food. And then you need to take it out on that body of water that contains fish. And you need to do one thing. You need to make that fly act like food.
Right.
Done.
That's it.
You're fly fishing.
And I noticed you didn't have the actual fly in that six. Where does that fit in your training
Maybe I missed a number. It's number one is rods, number two is reels, number three is line system, which includes a leader. Yeah, I skipped it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Number four, you obviously need some flies.
Yeah, gotcha.
Number five is polarized sunglasses. Number six is water.
Oh, gotcha. So basic, yeah, accessories. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So rod, reel, line system, flies, polarized sunglasses, and water.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. And obviously, we'll link out to that series. And this is a good thing is that we're not even going to come close to dig into what you have there. The opportunity I want to share for people is like, hey, another good example. You want to learn, get into this. You have somebody that's new to it. We'll send them over to your channel, right? That's the best thing. But I did want to just briefly touch, just a couple of these. So fly rod, reel. Let's just talk fly rod for a second, because there is a lot of diversity in fly rod. I mean, there's all sorts of fly rods depending on the species. You know, when somebody's new to it, is it just the, do you ask them what they're fishing for? Or is it more like just go for the 9 foot, 9 foot five way? What's your take there?
No, we always ask them what they're fishing for. That's first and foremost. And believe me, we also have a Q&A series on our YouTube channel. And we always tell people, please send your questions over to Mad River Outfitters, admin@madriveroutfitters.com, our email address. And excuse me, every single question is answered. And I mean, every single question, sometimes at 2 a.m. on Saturday night.
You answer those on the Q&A, like on the YouTube channel?
Well, every email gets answered with an email response. And of course, I can't film them all because I get 50 or 60 questions a day via email, sometimes more. And we pick the ones for YouTube that we think will be most useful to our audience and questions that we get a lot. But I get questions all the time. Hey, Brian, or hey, Mad River Outfitters crew, what's the best fly rod?
Yep.
Or what's the best fly line? Well, the truth of it is that there's really no way I can answer that question via email. It's really going to entail a phone call, which we also say in our videos that, hey, if this is a personal question about what fly rod should I buy, what fly line should I buy, you're really going to have to call the shop, because we're going to have a dozen questions for you. And I don't mean to complicate the matter, but it's just good customer service and caring enough to say, okay, when it comes to what fly rod is going to suit you best, first and foremost, what are you fishing for? Okay, where are you fishing? What types of water? Maybe to a certain extent, rod action can have something to do with your personality, your casting stroke. Rod action can have something to do with what types of flies or what types of lines you might be throwing. And then, of course, there's no way I can answer that question because we are always budget sensitive.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to recommend an $800 fly rod to a high school kid that's saving up his grass cutting money. So I always need to know what your budget is and what you're thinking about spending. And then it's my job, after I ask those 12 questions, it's my job to try to find the best solution for that problem. I've always told our employees at the shop is, when you're a salesperson, and no matter whether you're selling washing machines or whether you're selling cars or you're selling fly rods, a salesperson is a problem solver. Okay, a guy comes in to a big box store to buy a washer and dryer. Why is he there? Because he has a problem. He needs a washer and dryer. He's probably not buying it just for fun, just to upgrade. He's buying it because his washer and dryer is on the fritz and he needs a new one. So that's a problem. And then you become a problem solver and you find him the right washer and dryer. Same thing with a car.
Mm-hmm.
You can't walk into a car dealership and say, hey, what's the best car for me? Well, I got a couple dozen questions for you in that case.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with a fly rod. But the cool thing about working in a fly shop is, as that salesperson in that fly shop, you are a problem solver. It's just that the person that will just walk through the door, his problem is he wants to buy a fly rod. So it's a pretty cool problem to have.
It is. It's a cool place to be, and where you're helping them get into maybe their first rod, or maybe it's their, you know, their 10th rod. It's the same thing. Is it always, do you go through that same set of, you know, questions when you, if it's a person who's got 50 rods, is it all, or do they pretty much know what's going on at that point?
Yeah, but still, you're still going to have those questions. I'm still going to inquire. I'm still going to dig deeper. That's part of the, that's part of the integrity and the exceptional customer service, which is what I think Mad River Outfitters is known for and what we strive for every day of our lives. Sure, I could just hand somebody a fly rod and pat them on the back and get them out the door quickly. But, I just feel that the customer deserves a lot more than that. They deserve my best and our best under every circumstance. And therefore, it behooves us, you know, I can't tell you how many times people come in and they say, hey, I want the latest, greatest Sage rod. And they say, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. And I might say to them, I might say, hey, I'm not sure that's the right rod for you. Here I think is a better option. And then when that rod is $400 cheaper, they're absolutely blown away. They say, what sense does that make? Well, I'm not in this for a quick buck. If I was in it for a quick buck, I would have been out of the business in 2 years.
Yep.
We're in this for the long haul. We're in it to exceed our customers' expectations. And I'm there so that 5 years down the road, when that guy or gal is fishing that rod, they absolutely love that rod. And they remember when they bought it, where they bought it, and who they bought it from. And they remember that we took the time to make sure that they had the right rod for the job. And that's, you know, that just boils down to being good people and offering exceptional customer service.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fairflies, who was founded with the idea of finding ethical solutions to fly tying materials and products. They've done just that by creating jobs for marginalized people, both in the U.S. and abroad. Their 5D brushes make fly tying fast and enjoyable for all skill levels. Fairflies has replaced, they've also replaced craft fur with their own fly fur, a product made by Fly Tires for fly tires. And we've talked about this fly fur and the brushes in the past. We've had a couple episodes where we've dug into this, and the thing about this fly fur is it's super durable. That's one of the big features. If you want something that's not going to break down, that's going to last for a long time, you got to check out the fly fur. They've also got Wasatch custom angling tools. These are super heirloom quality, wood handled, very nice, very high quality stuff. They've got some, even some conventional gear. They've got a bunch of things going over there, Jeff and the crew. You got to check them out right now. If you want to support a great company who's supporting great people around the world and is doing things via fair trade and doing it on the right, you got to check out Fairflies. They are definitely a company that we love having on board here. And it's your chance to support them and this podcast by one easy click. wetflyswing.com/fairflies. FAIRFLIES. Check them out right now. Click over there and see what they have. You're going to be blown away if you haven't seen these brushes and some of the other stuff they have going on. Okay, back to the show. And you mentioned the leader. I know this is a key point you make on the leader maybe being the most important thing or one of the most important things with the setup. But talk about that a little bit. So let's say we got a rod. Let's just say we're taking it for, let's just stay on the smallmouth, right? Smallmouth. We've got a reel that balances. And then talk about that leader. Why is that so critical? So let's just take smallmouth fishing.
Well, I think you can sum it up this way. You could argue that your most important piece of gear is your fly.
Yep.
Okay, because that's what the fish sees. And that's really going to determine success or not success. Whereas, and I won't go off on this tangent, but the fly fishing industry has it absolutely backwards. The fly fishing industry wants you to believe that your most important piece of gear is, of course, what? Your rod.
Yep.
Number two, they want you to believe the reel. And we know why that is. It boils down to dollars and cents. When the reality of the matter is that your most important piece of gear is your fly. But one could argue that if you don't have the right leader And that leader, first of all, can't deliver the fly to the target properly, well, then what good is the world's best fly? Second, a leader does three things. A leader delivers a fly to a target. A leader then enhances or basically allows or enhances a lifelike presentation. And then number three, a leader must survive the fight of the fish, assuming you hook a fish. That's the three things a leader does. So if you have the world's best fly and that leader can't deliver it properly to the target, which let's say, we hear people all the time, they buy a size 2 Clouser minnow with lead eyes, and then a big box store sells them a 4X leader.
Right.
And then they wonder why they can't cast, or the leader collapses, or it whacks them in the back of the head. And then they give up fly fishing because they think they can't cast. Well, what good is that Clouser minnow? You can't get it to the target. And then number two, if the leader doesn't allow and enhance a lifelike presentation, well, the fly doesn't act like food. Once again, world's greatest fly does you no good. And then if you do hook a fish on a Clouser, a big smallmouth on 4X tippet, I would say good luck landing even an average smallmouth on 4X tippet. I mean, it can be done, but it's not smart and would not be recommended. So, the leader is so, so, so important. And like I said, so many shops, so many big box stores just sell people 4X leaders because they're 6-pound test and they don't even know what 4X means. So it's almost a tragedy. And so we've set out to really try to fix that and really try to educate folks on how important leaders are and how important it is to have the right type of leader as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, so lead, and then if we take it to also, we look at the body of water, obviously, that's finding a place with fish. If people come in, let's again take it to your shop locally, right? Somebody comes into your shop and they're like, okay, where do we go fishing? How do you walk somebody through that? You've got some different water bodies. I guess, again, talk about what they want to fish for. But if you got somebody new, what is your take? How do you walk them through that conversation?
Well, we ask questions. They have a problem. They want to go fishing, and it's your job to solve that problem. So first and foremost, yes, what do you want to fish for? Where do you live? How far do you want to travel? How good are you at wading? All those kind of things. And then we're going to determine a recommendation of where it might be best to send them. And, once again, talking about a good fly shop and exceptional customer service, we are always willing to share. Of course, I'm not going to tell somebody
right
an exact hole of where to go, but I'm going to tell somebody a 2-mile stretch of water or a 1-mile stretch of water where I would go if I were them. And here's the techniques I would use. Here's the flies I would use. And, you're always going to try to do your best because that person's success is your success.
Yep.
And there's another tip for the person just starting a fly shop. Your customer's success is your success, and you have to do everything in your power to help that person be successful. And part of that is sharing where you fish and sharing where you would fish. And, I don't want to say nobody owns this stuff. Some people do own waterways, but, the Mad River is not my river. It's everybody's river. And I hear people complaining about the canoe traffic on the river. Well, they have just as much right to be there as we do. And it's real simple. When the canoe traffic is hot and heavy during June, July, and August, I got news for you. Just fish early and fish late. That's when you want to fish anyways.
Yep. Is that what you guys see there with the Mad River? Well, you see this a lot of places around the country, but yeah, you get the good days, you get more people on in the sunshine, but early in the mornings or late, and then off seasons, obviously. Do you find that? Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's, definitely this is kind of, we're, like we said, touching the surface of some of this, but I just wanted to kind of dig into that just to have a little bit of a resource for somebody to check in, you know, if they are new or know somebody who's new to it. Talk about, you mentioned the questions. We'll start to take it out of here quickly, but as far as most common questions you get, sounds like you guys get hundreds of questions a week. Are they always, you just see those, like you said, best rod? If you had to say a top 10 list or whatever, 5 or 10 common questions, is that an easy one to answer?
I get a lot of questions on rods, and I get a lot of questions on, I think because of the Getting Started in Fly Fishing series and because of the reach of the YouTube channel, we do get a lot of beginners. So I get a lot of people asking about their first rod and reel combo. So I would say that's number one. We get a lot of questions about,
and how do you do that, Brian? So when you get that on your question, like, you know, rod and reel, how do you answer that question to people? Like, these aren't coming to shop. They're literally people that are out there. Do you direct them to give you a call, or how do you answer that question?
Most of the time, yes. I always try to answer their questions as best I can. I don't just say, hey, thanks for the email. You're going to have to call me or call the shop. I try to answer their questions as best as possible. I say, well, yes, here's a link to a lot of our entry level kind of combos. And I give them some basic information, you know, TFO has a great warranty, Reddington makes a nice one, blah, 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 and give them some basic information. And then try to quantify a little bit further. I need to know what you're fishing for. I need to know where you're fishing. I need to know, again, we ask those questions.
Yep.
And then at the end of the email, I always tell them that that this is really a customer service question. And those customer service questions are always going to be best addressed by calling the shop.
Right.
There's just no way around that. And it's almost like we've entered this age where, I don't know, telephones have almost become like obsolete.
Right.
Archaic form of communication.
Yeah.
And it's like people don't want to pick up the phone. But you'd be surprised when you're courteous and you show them that you're willing to offer exceptional customer service. But the best way I can do that is if you and I have a conversation. I would say 9 times out of 10, we get a phone call within 6 hours of that response. And then of course we wow them with customer service. And, then I get an email back from that person, and maybe they didn't talk to me. They talked to Ryan or Andy or Pat or someone at the shop. And they always say, Brian, thank you. I called the shop. The salesperson was fantastic. I got set up with this, this, and this. I look forward to doing more business with you in the future. So thank you. Thank you for your prompt and courteous response.
There you go.
And
there you go.
You know, every single person matters. But it's always going to be a conversation. And I get tons of questions on fly lines. You know, we've done a lot of talk about the importance of the fly line and having the right line. Of course, we've done a lot of work with sinking fly lines, and I think teaching and educating people about the importance and the use of sinking fly lines. And so I probably get 5 or 6 questions a day. Hey, Brian or Mad River crew, what's the best sinking line? I've got a 5-weight rod. What's the best sinking line?
Right.
Once again, there's no way I can answer that question.
No.
I've got to know 10 more things at least before I can make any kind of recommendation. But again, you answer that email, you try to give them as much information as you can and be courteous about it, and then suggest they give us a call. And then they almost always do. And I'd like to think that we almost always get them the right line. Because selecting the right line, especially when it comes to a sinking fly line, is just of critical importance.
Yeah, that's right.
We got a lot of questions about flies. What fly should I use? And to the point where we made a couple of videos real quickly that kind of answered those questions. And then I can send that person several links and just say, hey, watch this video, and I think it'll really help you determine what fly to use. Mm-hmm. We get tons and tons of questions about leaders. In fact, to be honest with you, that's probably number one right now, because like you've said, we do a lot of talking about leaders. and talking about selecting or building the right leader. And I get tons and tons of questions about leaders. But I will tell you, and we can wrap up this part here. Yeah. I can tell you the best question I ever had.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to guess that this person is not listening to your YouTube, to your podcast. The best question I ever had was, "Dear Brian, how do you know what you're fishing for?"
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a tough one, too. That'd be a tough one to answer.
I did. I forget exactly what it says.
Yeah, well, let me think of it. Yeah, so that's a, I'm not even sure how you, because you could, again, I guess it depends on the fly shop, right? You could answer that a few different ways.
Well, I think I might have recommended scuba gear.
Right. Right. There you go. There you go. Yeah, that's, well, no, that's good. I mean, I think, again, it's high level stuff we're digging into here, but I think today what we'll do is just put a bunch of links to your videos and your series, and then obviously they can call your shop if they have questions. And then do you guys see, I mean, it sounds, I'm guessing your YouTube channels, you create your new videos based on the questions you get. Is that kind of how you guys are coming up with new content each week?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, I think I still have, you know, I tell Dev and the crew this all the time that, I don't know, we've got 1,200, 1,500 videos out there, something like that.
Wow.
I tell them all the time that I still feel like we're just on the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that we can cover and that we can teach. So, you know, and I'm constantly sitting around in the evenings just jotting down notes of ideas of videos that we could make. The Q&A series, the question and answer series, that is dictated by questions that we get. And when I get a good one that I think would make for a good video and that, that, you know, our audience could benefit from the answers, I just save it in a folder. And then when it comes time to film, we film Q&As about once a month. I'll just dig through that folder and come up with three or four of them and answer them on camera. And when we do answer them in a video, we send out the person that asked the question, we send them out a free hat and a fly box, just something kind of fun.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And it gets people watching the series and looking to see if their question gets answered. And it's, and you know, a lot of people get a kick out of it. I always get an email saying, "Hey, Brian, thanks. It was really exciting to see my question answered. And thanks for the hat and the fly box." And it's really kind of fun. And it's, you know, I don't know, just to sum things up, I suppose, you know, I start every video with a kind of almost a slogan these days, and I say, "Howdy, friends." And I think that really sums it up, is that our customers are our friends. And I have so many friends that I've never spoke to, I've never met in my life. I've only emailed back and forth. And, you know, they tell me all the time that they feel like a friend of Mad River Outfitters. And, you know, we've earned their business. And even though they live in California or British Columbia or you know, Argentina, that we are their fly shop. And they support Mad River Outfitters because they feel like they're a friend. And, you know, I guess if I can leave a legacy and make a difference in this world, I guess that would be it.
That's it. Well, let's just take it out here quickly with a couple of little, we mentioned one at the start, but the travel was one thing I wanted to touch on just briefly. So it sounds like you guys are all over the place. Do you have a trip, you know, that you really are looking at over the next year that maybe a new one or something you're really focused on that you would highlight as maybe a bucket list trip for yourself?
You know, we haven't added much new stuff. I mean, I added in a trip to Labrador a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
For the trophy brook trout up there.
Yeah.
I got to host that first one. It was fantastic. And just an amazing wilderness experience. Of course, the pandemic caused us to take 2 years off from that, but we did go back in July. And looking to go back there. Of course, one of the highlights, one of my favorite, of course, I love saltwater fishing, so I love being down in New Orleans chasing redfish in the Bahamas, chasing bonefish, and then I tarpon fish in Florida quite a bit.
Yeah.
So those are all great trips, but really the most high adventure, the most exotic thing that we do, and I so look forward to getting back, is Brazil in the Amazon for peacock bass.
Right.
That is, I'm telling you, you fly in a float plane into the middle of the Amazon jungle. You're fishing with macaws and howler monkeys in the trees. And you know, we've seen some panthers. We've seen anacondas. We see pink dolphins.
Wow.
Yeah, it's and then on top of that, average week trip for 8 anglers, I'd say we average right around 1,900 to 2,000 peacocks for a week of fishing.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's off the charts. I know it sounds like, it sounds like an advertisement, but, 100 fish days for an angler are not out of the question.
Amazing. Nice. Well, we'll definitely maybe have to follow up with you on that trip at a later point. So the mandolin, I don't want to leave the music because I love touching on the music. You mentioned a couple of groups, some big bands, but who are, mandolin back in your day or even now? What are what were the groups that, when you think of the best mandolin players out there, who were they? Do you have a good feel for that either back in the day or currently?
Yeah, I would say, part of my fascination with the Grateful Dead, Jerry Garcia played with a guy named David Grisman.
Oh, yeah.
And David Grisman, or Dog, as they call him. David Grisman was certainly an early influence. I came to him through Garcia and the Dead, and became a big fan. But then, and I'll be brutally honest with you, Howdy Friends was stolen from really my mandolin hero, whose name is Sam Bush.
Huh.
And I don't know, 20 years ago, I was at a Sam Bush show, and it was kind of cool. I actually kind of became friends with him over time, and we used to hang out on the tour bus, and we would look forward to hanging out after the show and what have you. But about 20 years ago, Sam opened up a show and he walked right on stage and he waved to the crowd and he said, "Well, howdy, friends." And it just made an influence on me, and it just made me feel like everybody in the audience was his friend. Yeah, he is a really, on top of being like a Jimi Hendrix of Newgrass music. So,
oh wow,
just he's a real kind of humble and real person, and really became a big influence on not only my mandolin playing, but just my life in general, and about being a good person. And he came from a band called the Newgrass Revival.
Okay.
And as I'm sitting here in my basement, I'm looking at my, I'm so old, I still have a CD collection and a CD player. But I'm looking, and here's a Sam Bush CD and a Newgrass Revival CD right there. So I don't play, but I still listen.
Oh, good. Good, good. No, thanks for mentioning that. I'll try to find a Sam Bush video or something out there we can add to the show notes as well, so we could listen to that on the way out of here. Well, Brian, I think we're good here. Obviously, I always feel like a lot of these with somebody like yourself who's been around forever, I could talk and we could dig into any of these topics, for another hour. But I'm going to let you get out of here, and we'll send everybody out to madriveroutfitters.com or over to the YouTube channel if they want to connect. And yeah, hopefully we'll get some people your way, maybe some new anglers to come and check out your stuff. But thanks for all the time today and sharing a little bit of your history and knowledge.
I really appreciate you having me, man. And, this has been a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime.
So there it is. Thanks for landing. You are a go for landing. It is clear. Roger that. wetflyswing.com/374. That's where you're going to get the show notes, the links, the transcript, and everything else we got going. Big reminder before we jump out of here, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I want to want you to show your support for breast cancer awareness. You can do that right now by going to wetflyswing.com/pink, P-I-N-K, and you can actually support breast cancer awareness and enter to win some fly tying tools, some Fairflies brushes, and even a local guided trip to your neck of the woods. Check it out right now and go over there
And this is a good chance. You get bonus points if you after you sign up for that giveaway and you support Casting for Recovery. There's a quick link there. You can do that. And again, that's wetflyswing.com/pink. Pink will get you what you need. Quick listener shout out before we bust out of here. Ward Denaway from St. Paul, Minnesota. Ward is interested. He reached out by email and he said he's interested in redfish out of the Louisiana Gulf Coast. And he noted the bonus is New Orleans, that trip on the way back, hitting up New Orleans for some good times there. And this Ward, definitely, I want to say thank you for your support and thanks for the reminder. Redfish is definitely on my bucket list, as well as New Orleans. So I hope to maybe catch you, maybe we'll see you there, out there on the trip. Would love to put that one together. I'd love to hear from you. If you're listening right now to the very end, you haven't connected with me or it's been a while, I'd love to hear how we're doing on this show, or if you have an episode or just want to say, hey, what's up? I always love, it's kind of what keeps me going. Hearing from Ward and others out there lets me know I'm on the right track. And I'd love to hear where you're coming from. Are you coming from somewhere outside of the Midwest? Are you potentially in the Southeast? The Northeast? Let me know. I would love to hear it. Dave@wetflyswing.com. You can send an email really quickly and we can get it done. We've got some big giveaways coming up very soon. The Alaska giveaway, we noted it here. Fish Hound, this giveaway, we're actually giving away one of these trips up to Alaska to do this remote Alaskan trip. And you can enter. We're going to be kicking this off on October 24th at wetflyswing.com/giveaway. Giveaway will get you the link and you can enter to win that monster giveaway, which is going to be including a nice prize pack of products. All right, I am out of here. I'm going to get on. We're trying to get caught up on some of these episodes, so I'm going to launch away and get to the next one. And I hope to see you maybe soon. If you can, catch up with me online or social media. I would love to get with you on a trip and do some fishing. And if not, catch me online, dave@wetflyswing.com. I hope you are having a good evening. I hope you're having a good morning or a good afternoon, wherever in the world you are. And please check in and say hi, and I hope you have a good day. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.